News Talk 620 WWNR, keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel. Winter weather advisory from 9 p.m. tonight until 6 p.m. Thursday due to a wintry mix of precipitation. Light freezing rain, snow, and rain tonight. Ice accumulations are possible, an inch of wet snow possible. Temperatures dropping to 30 by dawn. Light snow and light freezing rain Thursday, maybe another inch of snow, highs in the mid-30s. Cloudy with rain and light snow early Thursday night, then snow showers possible late, low near 30. Partly cloudy, milder Friday, highs to 40. I'm meteorologist Mark Thibodeau from the Weather Channel.
WWNR, Beckley. The opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of News Talk 620 WWNR.
Tonight, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the 20,000 members of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, they're working for you. Now, Bob Kincaid.
Hey, good evening. Welcome to this Wednesday night edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. The Groundhog Day edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. The first anniversary of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And in commemoration of Groundhog Day, one of my favorites. This takes place about 1901-1902. Old priest has retired and immigrated to America, but he won't, you know, he's part of the tradition of service and wants to continue to serve the people in his parish there in North America.
And as a consequence, he decides, well, you know, what can I do most to help these people? And, well, I can help them learn English, because he already speaks English. So, they're having classes, and they try to segment the classes. You know, they talk about, you know, how to find stores and things. Just say speaking English at the dinner table, and so the topic for that evening's language class is holidays. And so the old man is teaching the class, and he says, "Okay, today we talk about the holidays. And I want to know who here can tell me in English what the Easter is." And young Mario sticks his hand up and he says, "Mario, you tell me about Easter." And Mario says, "Easter? That's at that time of the year when the big fat man with the fur trim on the red suit's coming down to the chimney and he give out the gift." He says, no, that's Christmas. That's the one we celebrate the birth of our Lord and Savior." "Oh," Mario sits down and says, who here wants to take another try at what the Easter mean?" And Luigi sticks his hand up. Now, this is not an ethnic joke, okay? This is just calm down. So Luigi puts his hand and says, "Luigi, you tell me what the Easter mean." He says, "Easter, that's the time of the year when it's all hot in the summertime, and the big brass band march down the street, and a lot of American flags wave, and at the night we have a big firework." "No, Luigi, that's the 4th of July. That's when we celebrate the birth of our country, our new country." "Oh," Luigi sits down. And finally, old Nunzio, almost as old as the priest himself, puts his hand up and he says, "Nunzio, you tell us what Easter means." Nunzio says, "Many, many years ago, the Romans, they nail up Jesus Christ on the cross, and they let him hang there till he died for our sins. And then they take him down and they put him in a cave and they roll a rock in front." And the priest is so happy, he's getting through to somebody. He says, "That's right, Nunzio, go on, finish the story." He goes, "3 days later, rock get rolled away. Jesus of Christ had come walking out of the cave just as alive as a you and me. Yeah, Lindsay, yeah. Jesus of Christ, he looked down on the ground, he looked right, he looked left, he looked down on the ground, he see his shadow, run back in, don't come at 6 more weeks. I love that joke. An old friend of mine said that was the last great Italian joke. But see, it's not an ethnic joke. It's a funny joke. It's a Groundhog Day joke. But anyway, so I'm sorry, but you know, we have a family tradition. Every Groundhog Day we tell that joke, and every Groundhog Day we laugh and snicker and make Dad promise to never tell it again, and the next Groundhog Day tell it again. You know, we've talked at some length, and yes, I know President Pinhead is going to read from a teleprompter to us tonight. That's what I like, being read to by an illiterate. But anyway, so, you know, I guess that's going to go down at 9 o'clock or something. But we have been talking at some length over the last couple of weeks about these dirty-minded religious weirdos like Dobson out there screaming, SpongeBob's queer! And, of course, I haven't touched much on this, but this right-wing hopping up and down, monk bat-wing flapping media frenzy over, what's the name of the show? Postcard from Buster, where Buster visits Vermont and learns how they make maple sugar and cream. And as an aside in the program, one of the people that Buster's visiting, the child has two moms. And of course, you know, the right wing weirdos whose lives are so pitiful and empty that they have nothing else to worry about. Not 100,000 dead Iraqis, not 500,000 dead people from the tsunami. No, they're worrying about a cartoon bunny and cartoon lesbians. They're having a fit about that. And last night it was the Love Rocks CD that professional heterosexual ex-lesbian Melissa Fryrear, who said Fryrear, was having a fit about on behalf of Focus on the Family. Well, they're doing it again. Check this out. There is an uproar about people with, you know, and I thought we got over this in the 60s. There is an uproar about people with long hair. Not people, men. Men with long hair. The weirdos want men with long hair to get a trim to no longer than 2 inches, with an extra 4/5 of an inch for bald men so they can have a decent comb over. Not kidding you. It's a short hair campaign that was actually launched in October. But of course, you know, the weirdos and freaks and intolerant people are ridiculing nonconformists, people, you know, men who insist on keeping their hair long, as unhygienic and being fools. You know, do you ever get tired of these people? Do you ever cease to be amazed at these people's willingness to meddle in other people's lives? And it's because their lives are vacuous and empty and desperate and dead. So, can we expect a man with this disheveled hair to perform his job well? That's the question. A hair trimming campaign. SpongeBob, Tinky Winky, Barney the Dinosaur, Buster, the postcards from Buster, Valentine's Day compilation albums featuring the music of Yoko Ono. Oh no. Yoko, oh no. And now hair. Oh, these intolerant jerks. Short haircuts. Oh, wait a minute. Wait, I'm sorry. The short haircut story is about the Stalinists in North Korea. Intolerant jerks. Wait, what's the difference? James Dobson, Kim Jong-il. You know, it's the same mindset. Control other people's lives instead of worrying about your own. Out there busily plucking the mote from someone else's eye while oblivious to the beam that is in their own. You know, I hate it when you can draw direct parallels between the Christian right in America and Stalinist totalitarian regimes in North Korea. But they're the same critters. I mean, you know, this is the same gang that gave us, you know, miracle math made easy. You know, 2 + 2, and then a miracle occurs, and it's 5! Holy say. But, you know, that's the way it is. I'm sorry the parallels are there. I sincerely apologize. But there's not much difference between Kim Jong-il and his ilk and James Dobson's focus on the family. The order to shaggy-haired North Korean men couldn't be clearer. Get a trim like Kim! Oh, my God. The reclusive communist country is waging a hair war, telling its male population to lose the long locks, cut the coiffures, and mow the mane to conform to socialist style no longer than 2 inches. Do you think James Dobson's hair is longer than 2 inches? I'm guessing not. And, let's see, what's the... Oh, yeah. The dictum claims that long hair hampers brain activity by taking oxygen away from the nerves in the head. And the reason, I read this story, and I'm like, this sounds like Focus on the Family. This sounds like Coral Snake Ministries. This sounds like Pat Robertson. This sounds like Jerry Falwell. This sounds like Benny Hinn or that Tilton freak. I mean, that long hair hinders the absorption of oxygen to the nerve endings in the... you know, this is... I mean, there's no difference between that and one of these freaks saying, did you know that cavemen and dinosaurs existed at the same period of time? Cavemen ate dinosaurs. Dinosaurs ate cavemen. Huh? What have we come to in America when there are more similarities between the North Koreans and the right wing than the right wing and the rest of normal America? Oh, that's not good. Bad things, man. Bad things. Oh, goodness me. Let's take a break. I'll take a breath. We'll come back and we'll have a lot more fun. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy again.
Price patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a direct TV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4-room direct TV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my direct TV system.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-641-0928. That's 1-800-641-0928. Ask how you can get 3 free months of HBO and Cinemax. Call 1-800-641-0928 at $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver offer ends February 28, 2005. Call now.
Every year, hundreds of miners in West Virginia are injured because coal mines deliberately violate known safety standards. When these coal companies cause injuries to workers, they often try to hide behind West Virginia workers' compensation laws. Don't let this happen to you. Call the law firm of Neely and Hunter, the Coal Lawyers, toll free at 1-888-567-2WIN.
I'm Richard Neely, and my law firm, Neely & Hunter, has years of experience in defeating workers' compensation immunity and making coal companies pay for the injuries they cause. If you or a loved one has been hurt at work because of poor safety standards, call me, Richard Neely, at 1-888-567-TO-WIN. I'll work to get you the cash and benefits you deserve.
Call 1-888-567-TO-WIN for Neely & Hunter, the Coal Lawyers. That's 1-888-567-2-WIN.
He's got a brain, and he's not afraid to use it. Liberally, of course. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 21 minutes after 7 o'clock here at Head On, a year old today. And if you're planning, well, you know, you can do this while listening or watching. I would suggest you stick with us, and we'll have the State of the Onion speech for you here, and maybe a little commentary afterward. But just to make it interesting, you can get these rules for yourself if you will go to the commondreams.org, the George W. Bush 2005 State of the Union Drinking Game. And the subheadline says, White Guy in Suit Looks to Extend Winning Streak. What you'll need for it is four taxpayers, including one white guy wearing a suit, two people wearing normal clothes, one wearing a blue shirt, the other in a red shirt, and one dressed as an old person. Shawls are nice. A shot glass for every person. Everybody brings one. Group them on the table. White guy in suit gets first choice. Red shirt picks second, and blue shirt gets third choice. Bowl each of guacamole and chips. $5. Everybody anties. You got to have a lot of beer. Senior citizen gets cheapest stuff you can find, like Old Milwaukee Light. White guy in suit drinks import of choice, and everyone else chips in to buy it, and the other two fight it out over Bud and Miller Light. Now, there's a lot. This is a complicated game, and there's a lot of rules. I mean, this is no average game of quarter bounce or fuzzy duck. So it won't take you long. You've got plenty of time to do this. Go to commondreams.org and go down the page a little way, the George W. Bush 2005 State of the Union Drinking Game. And if we've got a little bit of time left after the speech, you can call in, and we'll see how loaded people got trying to play. You know, I mean, some of the rules, whenever President Bush uses the words tax relief, mandate, or bipartisan, everybody drinks a shot of beer. Whenever George W. mispronounces Alawi, nuclear, or terrorism, last person to knock on wood drinks two shots. If he mispronounces Shiite, woo, first person to stop laughing is exempt from drinking the next three shots. And if the president says the word Texas, the last person to give the longhorn sign and yell, yeah, has to drink two shots of beer. And whenever George W. talks about saving Social Security, senior citizen takes a shot of beer. First time the president uses the word personalization, you take two shots, add another shot for each additional personalization. If Vice President Dick Cheney is caught napping on camera, white guy in suit has to drink a whole beer right then and there. Whenever George W. Bush talks about the evils of abortion or the sanctity of marriage, the last person to fall on their knees and pray drinks two shots of beer. It goes on. You'll enjoy it. Get ready. Starts about 9 o'clock? And that being the case, let's go to the phones. Let's celebrate our little birthday and go to the phones. 252-6200, outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. Now we got Jim. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Oy vey. Oy vey is right. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, oy gewalt.
Oy vey, oy gewalt. I mean, these people are totally meshugging up.
Oy.
I'll tell you.
Not menches they are.
You got it. You got it. All of us are a bunch of yenses. Jewish smartasses, as they would call them.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you something. I'm not going to listen to this Joker tonight because, you know, I've heard him tell so many untruths before. And, you know, once you lie to me once, it's never the same. You know what I'm saying?
I know. It kind of loses its cachet, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, once you BS me one time, you're going to have a hard time really getting my attention again. Not trying to throw rocks at you.
No, I mean, you know, George said it well himself. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice,
it won't get fooled again.
Well, you know, I said this on Dr. Bill's show this afternoon, and I know that I'm not the most popular guy out there, and I don't care. I'm not in this popularity contest. I'm here to speak the truth as I see it. But this man basically got up there before the election and said he wanted to buy the Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing, what is he going to do tonight? He's going to try to destroy this program using any pretense he can, and he's going to try to use any method he possibly can to subvert social programs that have been in place for a long time that have helped people. And the guy who's doing it is a guy who's never had to worry about paying the rent, never had to worry about a power bill, never had to make a car payment, never had to worry about where the next meal's coming from, maybe where the next lie is going
to
be.
Jim, this privileged little punk has never even had to worry about succeeding. He's had his own private businesses, and he has destroyed every private business he's had his hands on.
Oh, yeah. Well, that Arbusto.
Arbusto, yeah, Spectrum 7.
And there was one that he had where they blew $3 million of investors' money, and one of the guys who was in it with him said, "You hear?" He said, "Say hello."
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, said that all we did with that $3 million was chase women and drink and snort coke.
Well, at least they used it wisely. Sorry, couldn't resist. My bad.
That's okay. You know, but I'll tell you something. You know, even my cat gets upset when she knows I'm talking about him.
No, I know.
But I mean, the thing about it is, this man does not command my respect. I have no use for anything that he says or his rubber stamp cabinet. And you know, I just don't understand how he's going to do what he's going to do tonight. But he'll do it, and they'll get up there, and they'll applaud, probably 55% of them, just like the Reichstag used to applaud Hitler when he spoke.
Yeah, and there are rules in this drinking game, Jim, for what happens with the applause.
Well, I wanted to worry you. I'm worried about that, because I'm going to tell you something. Anybody that belongs to AA, if they're not safely ensconced at an AA meeting, away from a TV, when they listen to him, they're going to be doing a lot of late night phone calls to each other because that's not even a 12-step program that I know of that can allow sane people to handle what they'll hear from the well of the house tonight.
Oh,
that's for sure.
And it's a deep, dark, and polluted well, isn't it, Jim?
Well, it sure is. And, you know, maybe Cheney will do something wild, like drop the F-bomb on somebody. I mean, you know, he probably...
No, I'm expecting him to show up in his Auschwitz parka. Did you see that? Did you see that picture, Jim?
No, I didn't. I heard he made a visit over there.
Oh, you got it, the picture I saw was from the Washington Post, but you got to see. I can't even describe it. You know, all these European dignitaries in dark suits, neckties,
and he got a parka.
Overcoats. He shows up in Hermann Survivor hiking boots and trousers. And a Nanook of the North parka with
fly fishing?
Yeah, well, no, the real deal, you know, the real, you know, heavy parka with the fur ruff on the hood and a toboggan that's got Staff 2001 embroidered across it. You've got
to be kidding.
I can't believe, Jim, I can't believe you haven't seen this thing.
You know, there's only so much I can take per day.
For him
to go to a place like that, which is a shrine to the death of 6 million innocent human beings who perish, well, yes, I can understand his mentality.
Well, see, Dick heard Auschwitz had been a camp, so he wanted to wear proper camp clothes.
Oh, like summer camp.
Yeah, sure. Oh, well, winter camp, whatever, yeah. Ski camp.
You know, I can see him as a younger man up there in black boots and in a black uniform. Point people to the left. I can see that. You know, hey, you know,
I don't care. I don't. Has any Cheney ever served this country? I don't know.
I don't know, but I'll tell you, they've certainly done a lot of disservice to it and a lot of service to themselves. And, you know, Bob, I don't say this stuff to infuriate these people around here because I know a lot of them have wrapped themselves in the flag. But what I say to them, you can wrap yourself in a flag, and that's fine.
And you can strangle yourself with it, too.
But don't let it become a shroud.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, Jim.
I mean, you know, I serve my country, too, and I have a right to say what I say. I know what I'm talking about, and I don't try to baffle people with numbers and stuff like that. I just come from the heart with just straight facts. And when you have somebody that's good on there or whatever, I mean, I try to be decent to people, and as I did last night, and, you know, I have a good heart.
Absolutely, Jim. And listen, let me throw something out there. You know, we all email amongst each other. If anybody's got the link to the Washington Post story that has the picture of Dick Cheney in it, email it to Jim. You got to see this, Jim.
Well,
I mean, you're going to run around the room screaming and tearing at your hair when you.
Well, I was half doomed because I was on the phone with Nick Rahal's office, and his staffer looked it up, and there it is. Nick Joe signed that bill to give the churches the right to.
Yeah, H.R. 235.
Yeah, and I just said, this aggression cannot stand. And you know, I just said, listen, I cannot support this. You know, I simply can't support this because it's a violation of the Constitution.
Well, and it's a violation of the rights of the other 501c3s too.
Absolutely, and I don't understand how these people can do that. Nick could have got elected without support of these people who
Nick
are
did get elected.
No good.
Nick did get elected without the support of those people.
Well, you know, you're right.
He got elected by the normal people, not the the people that were supporting Snuffer would have voted for Snuffer if Snuffer had grown horns and a pointy tail. You know, which I personally think he hides under a hat and suit coat. Anyway. But those people aren't going to vote for a normal person. They're not normal. I mean, that's
well,
all there is
I can't
to
believe
it.
That Nick Rahal would, but he did co-sponsor that bill.
Yes, he did.
And it's in committee now, and it will probably come out of committee, and in all likelihood, he may sponsor
well,
it again.
Jim, listen, if you want to fight it, the information that I learned, the place I learned this from, a friend of the show shared it with me. It came from the Interfaith Alliance. And they can, and anybody within the sound of my voice, the Interfaith Alliance can use all the monetary support. You know, $5, $10 doesn't matter. $1. You know,
right?
They need your help to fight this.
Absolutely.
The Interfaith Alliance. You can find them online. You can find a means of donating. But they have got to have. You know, the normal religious people in America have got. We've got to band together and work together to stop this lunacy. To stop these Stalinist Christians. Pseudo-Christians, erstwhile Christians, ersatz Christians.
Well, you know, when you go to church, not to be concerned with the affairs of this world, but to sort of get away from them and to commune with the deity of your choice, in
right.
my opinion. I mean, you're supposed to leave that stuff outside at the door, and you're not supposed to, have it shouted at you. But I see all these people have used their pulpits, and they've used them, you know, wrongly. And I think that's just you know, like you said before, what they want is a theocracy, and that's not what this country is about. I'm sorry.
No, it's not. Hey, Jim, we're about
time to go.
I've run over, but thanks anyway. I appreciate it.
Hey, listen, you have a good one, and I'll talk to you later.
Okay, take care.
Out here.
All right. And time for a news update from Carl Mack, as well as the Workers Independent News Service. After that, we'll get back over the phones, 252-6200, 800-620-9967. Whichever one's best for you. Learn it, know it, use it. This is News Talk 620. This is Head On. I'm Bob. Good evening, this is Carl Mack, WWNR News. Fayette County Commissioners will meet with homeowners before deciding on ATV regulation. Commissioners will meet on February 28th with homeowners in the Adena Village area whose residents want an age limit on who can ride ATVs on the subdivision streets. Commission Attorney Carl Harris does not think the state statute would allow commissioners to set an age limit on ATVs. Sheriff Bill Laird was asked about enforcing any rules that might be put in place, and he said there was inherent danger in enforcing ATV rules. He said officers were careful not to engage four-wheelers in a pursuit situation, and problems could arise if standards were set in some areas of the county and not in others. Raleigh County's first female legislator remains hospitalized this evening after a fall inside her home. She's 86-year-old Jackie Withrow in intensive care at CAMC. Neighbors called authorities last Friday after they found Withrow's newspaper still rolled up and her mail
unchecked. A city patrolman and firefighters found Withrow lying at the foot of the stairs in her basement in a pool of blood. A CAMC spokeswoman says Withrow is awake, but not following commands. She said her mental status should get better as her head injury improves. And the Great American Race is coming to Beckley. For 22 years, the race has pitted teams of two drivers in vintage cars at least 45 years old in a coast-to-coast rally race. All the drivers will have a speedometer, clock, stopwatch, map, pencil, and paper. And the open road this year, the race starts June 25th in Washington and ends 2 weeks and 4,200 miles later in Tacoma, Washington. Cloudy this evening, rain moves in, then tonight, cloudy with rain changing to snow later in the night, about an inch accumulation. Tomorrow morning, some snow showers, back to rain in the afternoon, then back to snow by tomorrow evening. Temperatures tomorrow in the mid to upper 30s. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Today marks the debut of a California-wide ad blitz targeting Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's proposed healthcare industry changes. The governor has been in a heated battle with the California Nurses Association ever since he announced changes to staffing rules. Schwarzenegger used emergency action to freeze scheduled changes in nurse staffing ratios that would have assigned fewer patients per nurse. The 60,000-member union says that the changes will be harmful to patients. The ad will debut tonight in every major California cable market during a movie about Schwarzenegger's life.
The Kansas Association of Public Employees says Democratic Governor Kathleen Sebelius is allowing illegal anti-union activities against state employees. Betty Vines heads the employee association. She says her union has filed two formal complaints with the state labor board in Kansas in an effort to halt what she calls management intimidation tactics against the union.
I think it's kind of ironic that we're willing to send people all over the world to fight for other people's rights, and yet we constantly, from national on down, see our citizens being denied rights that should come to them easily, you know, and that they have to have somebody, a union or association, to be there to fight for them daily to make sure that they are denied those rights.
Vines says her union won't tolerate intimidation and interference from the state when it comes to the labor rights of state workers.
As garbage workers rallied in Hamilton Township, New Jersey yesterday, their company prepared to start hiring permanent replacement workers. Workers represented by the Teamsters have been striking against Waste Management Incorporated for 22 days with no date set to resume contract negotiations. The company warned strikers last week that if they didn't accept the company's latest offer, they would face the possibility of being replaced. This week, the company began collecting job applications for permanent replacement workers. Teamsters officials say that because the strike is an unfair labor practices action, the workers are protected from being replaced. The National Labor Relations Board has not yet classified the strike. If the NLRB rules it economic, the workers could be replaced. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Alabama saw a growth spurt in union membership during 2004. Government figures show that 9.7% of Alabama workers belonged to a union in 2004, up from 8.1% in 2003. Nationally, there has been a decline in union membership from 12.9% in 2003 to 12.5% last year. Many states, especially in the South, have seen organizing decrease as plants close and jobs go overseas.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Thank you for listening to the station that puts you one-on-one with the people and the issues that matter most to you. News Talk 620, WWNR. A man who just loves conservatives. Baked, boiled, or fried. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. Almost 20 minutes before 8 o'clock, on this, the first anniversary of by far the hippest, coolest, funnest, most intelligent, smartest, and occasionally funniest talk radio in the entire state of West Virginia. I'm tickled to death. Listen, here's a headline I want you to check out from the New York Times. U.S. encouraged by vote, officials cite turnout, high turnout, despite terror. And the paper reports
U.S. government has been surprised and heartened by the size of the turnout, despite a terrorist campaign to disrupt the voting. A successful election, it went on, has long been seen as the keystone in the president's policy of encouraging the growth of constitutional processes. You heard that, right? Monday, Tuesday. Oh, they had such a lovely election in Iraq. Now, let me share it with you this time without a couple of words that I excised. On September 4th, 1967, the New York Times published an upbeat story on presidential elections held by the South Vietnamese puppet regime at the height of the Vietnam War. Under the heading, U.S. Encouraged by Vietnam Vote, officials cite 83% turnout despite Viet Cong terror. The paper reported that the Americans had been surprised and heartened by the size of the turnout despite a Viet Cong terrorist campaign to disrupt the voting. A successful election, it went on, has long been seen as the keystone in President Johnson's policy of encouraging the growth of constitutional processes in South Vietnam. Again, from Common Dreams. Headline, the Vietnam turnout was good as well by Sami Ramadani, a political refugee. Now dig this, especially the little lurking neo-Confederates who think this war is just the coolest thing since sliced bread. Sami Ramadani was a political refugee from Saddam Hussein's regime. He's a senior lecturer at London Metropolitan University. And he writes, if truth is the first casualty of war, reliable numbers must be the first casualty of an occupation-controlled election. The second layer of spin has been designed to convince us that an overwhelming majority of Iraqis participated. The initial claim of 72% having voted was quickly downgraded to 57% of those registered to vote. So what percentage of the adult population is registered to vote? The Iraqi ambassador in London was unable to enlighten me that, in fact, as UN sources confirmed, there has been no registration or published list of electors. Uh-oh. All we are told is that about 14 million people were entitled to vote. Not that they voted. They were entitled to. But it was a wonderful election, wasn't it? Oh, yes, it was. It was a wonderful election. What did we have last night? What did Chris send us? Yeah, from Dar Jamal. Two of the food dealers I know told me personally that our food rations would be withheld if we did not vote, said Saeed Jodhet, a 21-year-old engineering student. Just days before the election, 52-year-old Amin Hajar, who owns an auto garage in central Baghdad, had said, I'll vote because I can't afford to have my food ration cut. If that happened, me and my family would starve to death. It was a lovely election, wasn't it? It was a beautiful election. Democracy is on the march. So when you hear the pinhead in chief talk about freedom being on the march in Iraq, just remember, he's lying again. He's lying again because his lips are moving. He's lying again because he can't say good morning to his wife without telling a lie. Because every morning that blood pimp occupies the White House is not a good morning. Just remember that. Of course I voted. I had to vote. If I didn't vote, my family and I would starve and die. And you know, that's just the beginning. Mercy. You know, what's going on in the Kurdish north? You know, we've managed to do something very special in Iraq. We've managed to heighten and re-establish the ethnic divisions in that country. The Kurds want a Kurdish homeland. It's making the Turks really nervous. The Shiites want a Shiite theocratic nation, which is just making the mullahs in Iran go, oh yes, yes, I cannot wait. And the Sunnis are thinking, you know, I'm going to blow somebody up. And then John Kepi tells me, welcome back, John, by the way. John Kepi tells me that he saw an article today where, lo and behold, the election's over, and whoever the head puppet is in Baghdad has said, it would be terrible if the Americans were to leave. Please don't leave, Americans. Please occupy your 14 permanent bases from now till God knows when, please continue to have the flower of your American youth bleed and die in these stinking sands for no good reason at all. Please stay. If you don't stay, someone will blow my stinking brains out. Oh, brother. Now, let's go to the phones. Hey, Paul, you're head on. How are you tonight?
Hey, Bob. Doing just fine. Happy birthday, a day late.
Well, thank you.
And congratulations on your anniversary of your program.
Thank you.
Now I want to really get into something here.
Okay, hit it.
You know, at $9 billion they can't account for, it's lost.
Mm-hmm.
Funny thing, this new contract for the fleet of helicopters for Britain and Attlee is $9 billion, too.
Devil, you say.
Sounds like a payback for joining us in the war.
Kind of does, doesn't it?
It sure
does. Oh, they wouldn't do that, would they, Paul?
I wouldn't put anything past this bunch.
Oh, now, these are Jesus' best friends. I mean, butter wouldn't melt in their mouth, would it?
Oh, I'm afraid he'd light a fire under it.
Oh, he's gonna someday. He's gonna. He's already subcontracted the bellow hopping out to the little demons in hell.
I've got a pretty good handle on that one.
So do the little imps.
Yeah, but I was just thinking about this thing. You know, you can't account for this $9 billion, but you've got a contract for this fleet of helicopters. And to beat it all, he's not going to be in the office in 2029 when these things are ready.
I wouldn't be so sure, Paul, because I don't know if you heard last night, our friend Chris called in and gave me a little heads up about some quid pro quo going on in Congress about Arnold's hopes to be president and the constitutional amendment that would require.
Hey, I would fight that every step of the way.
Well, what you and I do doesn't much matter because they've thrown a little sweetener into the pot. And that sweetener is we'll make it three terms as president in the constitutional amendment if you'll give us Arnold.
Give us Arnold and we'll all be girly men, huh?
Well, no. Wait, you got to work through it, Paul, because here's the thinking. If we can make the presidency a three-term limit instead of two, that gives us a chance to have the absolute world knockdown dragout when the big dog Bill Clinton comes back to run for a third term against Georgie running for his third. And then after either one of those, they'll have to bow out, and by that time we can have the constitutional amendment rammed through. So no matter who steps down at the end of that third term, we get Arnold.
Well, we get a chance to vote on it, though.
Yeah, we do. Well, I hope.
Because you got to go through 2/3 of Congress, House and Senate, signed by the president, sent down by the state, 3/4 of states have to prove it.
That's true.
And just like these other things they've done, they didn't change the Constitution. They violated it, just like this president went to war. Congress violated its duty.
Well, Congress pretty much gave up. The ones that voted to give him the power to go to war pretty much gave up the right to any of our respect, didn't they, Paul?
They sure did. And it's just like on all these rollovers on the pensions and everything else, that's another violation. You got to remove the word pension from the 14th Amendment if you're going to do this. Then you had to deny the people's rights under the First Amendment to readdress the government, their property under the Fifth, their rights under the Tenth, and the 14th Amendment.
And somewhere along the way, there's a little due process problem and a little... little qualms.
What these clowns have been doing is something else. But we're going to listen to the chicken hawk speak tonight.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I guess I'm, like I said, there may be 20 minutes or so left when he's done babbling. So maybe we can have some reaction.
Well, we're over to have some real reaction.
Yep.
And just like this governor with his week ahead of time before his State of the Union speech, too, to clown all of this, too, with no debate on it.
Well, that's still under my skin.
Yeah. Okay, Bob.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
You're welcome.
Take care now.
Uh-huh.
And, I've got a couple of articles here, from that paragon of journalism, USA Today, talking about what to expect tonight. And you will not hear the word privatization of Social Security because, you see, they've done focus groups on that, and it hasn't played real well. So you'll hear personalization or personal accounts because you know, this guy who said he doesn't care what focus groups say. Focus groups more issues than any other president before him. So you'll hear personalization. You know, and I hate it. I hate it when people that are our erstwhile enemies come out and speak the truth. But this from the Associated Press today. Cuban leader Fidel Castro said President Bush appeared deranged during his inauguration speech. In comments aired on state-run television late Tuesday, Castro told thousands of teachers attending an international pedagogy conference in Havana that he closely watched Bush's inauguration speech January 20th and saw the face of a deranged person. Well, apparently Fidel only watched that speech. We've been watching him for 4 or 5 years now, and every time he comes on the television, we're looking at a crazy man. Yeah, I hate it. You know, Castro, fiddlesticks. Castro. But, you know, so what if he said it? I've been saying it a lot. The man is crazier than a sprayed roach. I mean, we're talking about a guy who loses a war with a pretzel. We're talking about a guy who can't. We used to have there used to be one of those Segway scooters around here, and some of the younger people would sort of tool around the. Remember that, John? Tool around the station, and they didn't seem to have any problem with it. Never saw a single human being fall off of it. George Bush almost disfigured himself trying to ride one. Can't ride a Segway. Can't ride a bicycle. You know, walk and chew gums probably up in the air. And he's got his finger on the nuclear button. There's some guy walking around with a nuclear football briefcase with him at all times. And if that is not enough to make you sit up in the middle of the night with the cold sweats pouring off of you, you're a little too mellow. So, you know, we know what to expect. Where's the story? Let's see, what's he gonna do here? I got it right here. Man, bear with me. Doggone it. These things happen sometimes, but you know, it certainly is irritating when it does. That was not a sound effect, that was me banging the microphone stand. There it is. I see it coming. Yep. Bush to push for Social Security overhaul. It's just, let's see. 40 minutes, starts at 9 p.m. He will pledge to work with Congress, quote, to find the most effective combination of revisions, although he's ruled out some remedies such as... that's important. Although he has ruled out some remedies such as raising Social Security taxes. George Bush, who has never worked an honest day in his entire miserable life, has made an absolute blanket statement that we will not eliminate the ceiling on Social Security taxes and make all Americans pay them, not just the middle class. We're not going to make his corporate buddies pay him. We're not going to make the haves and the have-mores, as he describes them, his base, as he describes them, pay into Social Security. We're not going to make them be Americans. Because, you see, this crowd that doesn't want to pay taxes, this crowd who has more than all of us put together and doesn't pay nearly as much as we do in taxes as a percentage of personal income, this crowd that doesn't pay into Social Security and yet wants to wrap itself in the flag and wants to have all the defenses of all the privileges of military defense and economic protections that cost you and me money to provide, they don't want to pay their way. And I'll tell you right now, these are deadbeat un-Americans. We're out here working every single day. We're out. Granted, it's a commercial spot, but there's some good statistics at IWantMyVacation.com. It's sponsored by Universal Studios Florida. Average number of vacation days, and they're listed there. Italy, Germany, France. And you got to go down about 10 or 12 countries before you get to the United States, and it's like six. Don't quote me. We work harder than anybody else in the world and are less appreciated than just about any other worker. At some point, and there's statistics on this site, iwantmyvacation.com. There are statistics on there that talk about what not getting a vacation does to human beings. You know, for heaven's sake, you know, the business with Kim Jong-il that I was having fun with earlier. Do we want to be like them? We're becoming more like them every day. The Bush White House is just slightly less secretive than Kim Jong-il's. What does that say to us? Let's go to the phones. Jack, you're head on.
Yeah, Bob, it's Jack. I'm just wanting to call and ask you about Massey, how they got it by with taking over and losing all those miners that's got many kids.
Mm-hmm.
And when they can't afford their bills or their house payment, their gas, their water, all this we got coming on us, you know, that's a shame. How'd they get that by? To let Massey take that over like that and lose all these miners, their welfare and their insurances and all.
Well, all it took was a corrupt bankruptcy judge in, I believe, Lexington, Kentucky, who was willing to overlook the law of the land. And Massey does this all the time. Who, you know, they've bought coal companies all over West Virginia, Kentucky, wherever, and they do this all the time. They say, okay, great big pinstripe suited bankers, we're gonna make sure we pay the debts on the dozers and the drag lines, but you know, we'll just say to heck with the working people.
Well, Bob, that just don't cover it, buddy. That just don't cover it.
No, it doesn't.
I mean,
wrong.
What in the hell's going on in this America? Now, I'm going to tell you something else too. All them Iraqis over been trained to be soldiers, and they've taught them how to fight and all this. Okay, shouldn't they be a lieutenant in there to take care of that and let them take over, and knowing that they're in the right senses, and let them take it over without us staying over there all this time, all that money? And here's these miners, lost, gosh darn, maybe their home, their automobiles, and everything else.
There's a couple
I don't know what's going on.
Jack, there's at least one miner down there who's lost his health care and his family's health care, and his wife is suffering with breast cancer.
Yeah, well, Bob,
you know, that's not, is that America, Jack? Is that the America that you and I were taught?
No, sir. Listen, let me tell you something. I never lived on my mom, and you do have some deadbeats in this country that don't want to get out there and do nothing, but we weren't one of them. My mother was a custodian and worked her a rearing off, and I wouldn't lay back on her. I went out there and worked.
Sure.
That's not God. There's a stern thing to do with this Massey, and they want to take over the miners. Forget that.
Well, their ultimate goal, Jack, is to create, you know, George Bush talks about an ownership society. What their goal is to create that ownership society, only it's going to be an ownership society like we had in 1860 before the Civil War, where some people are going to own other people. And guess what the middle class gets to be, Jack? We get to be the slaves.
Oh, yes, sir, I agree to that. But at the same time, I think about them miners. And Bob, I'm going to tell you, it's common sense. I mean, I raised a family, and I stood up and stood by my family, and I raised them.
Yep.
But at the same time, I'm going to tell you, these many miners have been true blue, and no. Now I'm not talking about alcohol or nothing. And they some that don't even smoke.
Yeah,
ain't got nothing to do with that. Now how this government of ours can take over that and ruin them of everything they've worked through in all their life?
No,
I don't understand.
Well, there's only one answer, Jack. They're not Americans that would do that. Thanks, Jack. We gotta do the news. All right, this is News Talk 620 WWNR. Beckley, this is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
WWNR.
WWNR Beckley. News Talk 620, WWNR Beckley. Now, CBS covers the world at the tone. It's 8 o'clock.
News Talk 620 WWNR, keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel. Winter weather advisory from 9 p.m. tonight until 6 p.m. Thursday due to a wintry mix of precipitation. Light freezing rain, snow, and rain tonight. Ice accumulations are possible, an inch of wet snow possible. Temperatures dropping to 30 by dawn. Light snow and light freezing rain Thursday, maybe another inch of snow. Highs in the mid-30s, cloudy with rain and light snow early Thursday night, then snow showers possible late, low near 30. Partly cloudy, milder Friday, highs to 40. I'm meteorologist Mark Thibodeau from the Weather Channel.
WWNR, Beckley.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Mr. Speaker, the most drop-dead, ignorant, but bloodthirsty human being ever to occupy the White House.
Less than an hour from now, we'll be hearing something like this. I don't know if you caught it earlier today, but those brave, those ever so bold souls of the Democratic Party in the United States Senate have decided that they will not, we promise, we're not gonna do anything to block Dr. Torture from becoming Attorney General of the United States. Washington Post today by Dana Milbank, page A04. Ultimately, Democrats concluded they had neither the votes nor the political stomach to block confirmation of Gonzalez. The United States Senate and the Democrats therein are going to allow to be confirmed a man who said that torture is not, that torture is only something that causes organ failure or death. Wow. It looks like, according to Minority Leader Harry Reid, he said 25 or 30 Democrats will vote against Gonzalez. But he may get even more than the 42 no votes that Crisco John Ashcroft got in 2001. And he was the most opposed nominee for Attorney General ever. You know, Gonzalez lied under oath to the Senate, approved torture. You know, you wonder if maybe when he was sitting there in his Senate confirmation hearings, if maybe some senator with a spine would have said, Senator, I'm really glad to see today that you brought your family with you. You have a lovely family. Now, if you'd have your youngest son come over here and stand on this box. And go ahead, bring the battery cables over. Now, we're going to hook the battery cables to your son's hands. Judge, don't worry. We haven't hooked them up to the battery yet, and this is an old diehard anyway. It doesn't have it. There's not enough in there to do him any real harm. Judge, please. There's not enough juice in that battery to cause organ failure or death. Oh, darn. Look, your son's wet himself, Judge. Wait, why is your wife crying? You're tearing up yourself, Judge. Now, why would you be doing that? This isn't torture. You've clearly said in your memo this isn't torture. You're not feeling tortured, are you? Nothing's being done to you or your wife. Nothing's being done to your boy. That's not torture, is it? Or is it? Do you understand? This is the kind of human garbage that's going to be allowed to be the chief law enforcement officer of the United States. I lift my lamp beside the golden door.
Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free.
Flush it all. We got a liar in the State Department, and an incompetent one at that. And we've got the nastiest thing to come along since Torquemada is going to become the Attorney General of the United States. Because Democrats concluded they lacked the stomach to block the confirmation of Gonzalez. But in this Washington Post story, and you know, you got to read along, you got to pay attention, because you can really find what did Pinhead call it? The soft something of something bigotry. There it is in Orrin Hatch's comments. You know, Orrin Hatch was out there doing, you know, being a good soldier for the Republicans. Gonzalez was born in a mud hut, or I'd say it was a log cabin, but they don't have any of them logs in Mexico. It's all desert. You know, Senator Orrin Hatch set up a large photo of Gonzalez on an easel on the floor. And this is what he said. To have this man, who has come from nowhere, from the most humble of circumstances, who typifies the struggle every immigrant family to this country has gone through, to not give him this opportunity when he is fully qualified for it, I think would be a travesty, Orrin Hatch said. Hey, Orrin, why don't you do something about the polygamy problem in your state, buddy? You know, never mind. That would make him not be a hypocrite. But did you catch it in there? In that first phrase, the soft hatefulness of low-rent bigotry, or whatever, you know, whatever Chicken George said. To have this man who has come from nowhere, from the most humble of circumstances. You know, thanks, Orrin, you whitey snob. Nowhere, you know? Nowhere. Who has come from nowhere. Goodness me, he wasn't even in the social register. Nowhere. You know, I got a feeling it's going to come as a real surprise to all those Latinos and the white folks in South Texas to find out that they come from nowhere. Wonder how George Bush is going to feel when he finds out that Orrin Hatch thinks that he was that George was the governor for a couple of terms of nowhere. Oh, these nasty little bigots. To have this man who has come from nowhere. Oh, Buffy, bring me another Lux Vomit canapé. And some of those delightful hummingbird tongues as well. Ooh. You know, if you pay attention to them when they least expect it, you can really catch these people in their element. Do you hear how the Republicans think about you? Can you imagine what the Republicans would say about somebody who came from up a holler around here? To have someone who has truly come from nowhere. These people disgust me. And they disgust other people with a sense of shame and a sense of conscience. I mean, this guy, according to the Republicans, this guy gets to be Attorney General because he came from nowhere. Goodness me. He came from nowhere. If coming from nowhere is all it takes, I know you hate when I do this. Hitler didn't come from a particularly well-heeled family. Coming from nowhere is not a particular recommendation
for becoming the chief law enforcement officer of the United States.
Oh, but Bob, he came from nowhere.
You know, blech.
On the other hand, Ted Kennedy says Mr. Gonzalez is at the center of a torture policy that's run roughshod over the values that Americans hold so dear.
Yes!
And so, you know, 20 or 30 Democrats are going to vote against him and they'll feel real good about it. But they're not going to filibuster. They could filibuster, you know. They could stand up for an America that doesn't believe in torture! But that wouldn't be good, because after all, we don't want to stand in the way of a man who came from nowhere becoming Attorney General. He came from nowhere. Nowhere is right next to Terlingua, I believe, in South Texas.
Yeah, I despise a snob. Honest to God, I do. And how many members of the United States Senate are going to vote in favor of torture? There's a new movie out, by the way. It's a new video from Guantanamo. Shows Americans beating Guantanamo detainees. It shows Americans forcing Guantanamo detainees to remove their clothing from the waist down. From yesterday, AP videotapes of riot squads subduing troublesome terror suspects. You know, how do we know they're terror suspects? They haven't been charged with anything. Although a U.S. Federal judge did say the other day that people in Gitmo have a right to at least ask the court why they're being held. Videotapes of riot squads subduing foreign nationals at the U.S. prison camp at Guantanamo Bay show the guards punching some detainees, tying one to a gurney for questioning, and forcing a dozen to strip from the waist down. One squad was all female. And you do know the story about the one from Mr. Saar's book that's coming out soon, about the one who wiped red ink all over the face of one of these Muslim detainees and convinced him that it was menstrual blood, because he's part of this, his religion and his societal conditioning makes him think that women are dirty. Just like the right-wing Christians do. Investigators from the U.S. Southern Command in Miami wrote the report that was obtained by the Associated Press after spending a little over a week in June reviewing 20 of some 500 hours of videotapes involving immediate reaction forces. February 17, 2004, showed one or more team members punching a detainee on an area of his body that seemingly would be inconsistent with striking a pressure point, which is a sanction tactic for subdued. Don't you love the scientific language? Inconsistent with attempting to strike a pressure point. They're beating the snot out of this guy. The punching was in line with accepted law enforcement practice of striking the pressure point on the back of the thigh to temporarily distract the detainee. A video showed a guard kneeing a detainee in the head. A platoon leader taunting a detainee with pepper spray and repeatedly spraying him before letting the reaction team enter the cell. Investigators also noted about a dozen cases where detainees were stripped from the waist down and taken to the Romeo block of the camp, where prisoners are left naked for days. Several detainees expressed horror about female MPs either escorting them or touching them as members of an IRF team. Now, look, I want to get square on something. I, you know, like I said last night, I'm a human first. not a human male, I'm not a human female, I am a human. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all are created equal. I find it silly, you know, these cultural customs that think that women are dirty or that... It's dumb. It's just dumb. But still, to act upon the superstitions and cultural mores of another human being in order to inflict horror upon him, is that right? Is it? And see, you can always get to the bottom of this issue by saying, what if they did it to your son? What if they did it to your daughter? And because we're doing it to these people, is there a likelihood that if my son or daughter who is over in the Iraq theater of operations, if they catch him, that they'll do something equally horrible? Or if you're a devotee of Flush Flimball, it's all just blowing off steam and it's all just a fraternity hazing. It's all just a prank. Tells you a lot about Flush Flimball when he says that having a broom handle jammed up your hindquarters is a prank. I don't see that as pleasant. I don't see that as enjoyable. I don't see that as something I ever... Listen, I've had a colonoscopy and they had to render me unconscious to do that. And that was medically necessary. But just to stick a broom handle up some goat herd's bottom... because you're an American and you can. Yeah, that's problematic. That's trouble. That's bad karma by the boatload if you go in for that end of things. It's madness. And this, every bit of this was passed on and come up with and sanctioned by who? By Alberto Gonzalez. This man who has come from nowhere. I don't know, maybe coming from nowhere makes you mean. You know, what's that old joke about, Hitler did all kinds of drugs, drank everything in the liquor cabinet, but he would never drink tequila. You know why? Made him mean. You know, what did... Gonzalez testified to the Judiciary Committee that torture and abuse will not be tolerated. But he couldn't remember authoring that memo that said anything short of organ failure and death isn't torture. He also told the president that he has the authority to ignore American laws passed by the Congress, signed by the president, enacted into law that say torture is wrong. Alberto says that George Bush just has to wave his little national security wand and that statute disappears. That law just disappears. Louis XIV... What did Louis XIV say? L'état, c'est moi. The state is me. Well, if George Bush could speak French, I'm sure he would agree with that. L'état, c'est moi. This is... I don't know, it'll be interesting to see the roll call vote from the Senate on Gonzalez. The obvious problem with our armed forces is their inability to comply with international law. Many of us thought that the Abu Ghraib scandal in Iraq was going to shake us into awakening, but it seems like things we keep learning about Guantanamo indicate there was, in fact, a systematic abuse. Meanwhile, last week, what did I have? A letter from 10 or so retired generals, admirals, saying, please, please, Senate, don't confirm Alberto Gonzalez. He's going to be bad for the rest of us. He's going to put our troops in greater harm than they already are in. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. What is the man... Oh, let's go to the phones. Oh. Hey, Wesley, you're head on.
Bob?
Yep.
Well, I don't call in too much, you know.
That's okay. Anytime
and,
you know,
I give compliments to Paul and a lot of other people.
Yeah. I got a lot of smart people call this show.
Well, you know, but they're, you know, smart or what, you know. You know, Paul and, you know, a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff, you know, sometimes I, you know, disagree, but sometimes I have to agree with him.
Yeah.
And like you, you know.
Yeah, sure.
We're not, you know, we're not the dirty little rotten liberals, you know, that they think we are.
No, we just love our country, that's all. And we hate to see it devolve into a fascist torture state.
Do you have an open mind?
Me? Yeah, wide open.
Yeah, of course. Don't we all?
No.
And they call us Democrats and you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Open mind.
Well, you know, an open mind can be taught, a closed one cannot. An open mind can learn, a closed one cannot.
Well, you know, I had a cousin, you know, but he worked for Massey Coal Company.
Mm-hmm.
And his mind was not open too much.
No, no. You're not allowed to have one of those if you work for Massey.
But, you know, they gave him a turkey and a ham. But when he got, you know, his thing broke, you know, stuff like that. You know, his whole body broke. Yeah. And then
it's tough, isn't it, Wesley?
Yeah. Well, it's not tough for me. And I told him, I said, these people is not going to do that for you. And this is back in the '80s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm an old man, you know, or something like that. You know, buddy, you know, I'm only 50, you know. Right?
Yeah.
And I knew you had a birthday. 42?
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the crowd. You're an old man.
I feel that way sometimes.
But, you know, it's like Paul. You know, I don't, you know, if you could be 35 years old, you know, it's a knowledge, you know. It's, you know, you got to, you know.
Right.
You know, it's what your brain works, you know.
Right.
Or wrong on, you know. But, well, they just lost him, you know.
Yeah.
I see Coal Company lost him.
Yeah.
They gave me a turkey and they gave me a ham.
And a laurel and hearty handshake and sent him on his way.
Yeah.
Disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they don't care about people.
Sure. And, you know, it's like you said, you know, heritage and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
My father was a coal, you know.
Yeah.
He worked in coal mines. And then, you know, where you come from?
Yeah.
But, you know, they did a good time up there, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Good gracious. How many of the people that live around here come from a background in coal? And how many of them now, you know, look up and say, wow, you know, I made it all on my own. I did this all myself.
That's right.
And turn around and spit on the people below them.
You know, when they dug that tunnel up there, they got silica in their lungs.
Oh, yeah, silicosis, sure.
Yeah, remember that?
Yeah, and Gauley Bridge was known as the town of the living dead.
Yeah. Well, what did they give him? You know, what did they give him, people up there?
Nothing. I mean, they died so fast that the undertakers couldn't deal with the load.
Yeah.
Tells you something, doesn't it, Wesley?
Yeah, it certainly does. Now, you know, if there's anybody, you know, that speak, you know, with their mouth, you know, if you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about, you know.
No, I know what you're talking about.
But there was silicon. That's what it is. I could get him. When he went through that tunnel.
Well, it turns your lungs into concrete, Wesley.
Sure it does. And what'd you get for it?
Nothing. And if they said, you know, I feel like I'm getting sick, I need to take a little time off, they said, no, you're fired. We'll get somebody else that wants to work.
You got it. And you're like a wet, you know. I listen to your programmers over here because I wasn't there. But my ancestors were.
Yeah.
You know, heritage. like you said.
Well, you know, there are other cultures that actually value their ancestry. We don't.
Well, I do.
Living or dead, this culture does not revere its past. If it did, you wouldn't have half the non-union people you have in this country, because they would have grown up and they would have supported the thing that made their life good. But instead, we got people running around here saying, you know, oh, West Virginians make too much money. Yeah, I despise those people.
If you put a quarter in your pocket, and I, you know, somebody told me this, you know, you put a quarter in your pocket, they think they're rich.
Well,
not,
yeah, or born,
not at all.
Yeah, or born on third and think they hit a home run.
Yeah.
Hey, Wes, we got to hit our break, man. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Hope we'll hear from you again. Take care. Okay, let's see. News update from Carl Mack, followed by Jim Hightower's commentary. It's about 8:30. We'll be back with more right after this. I'm Bob. Good evening, this is Carl Mack, WWNR News. About 110 members of the Oak Hill-based 1863rd Military Police Company were shipped out this morning to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri to start training. Governor Manchin and Adjutant General Alan Tackett came to the National Guard Armory in Oak Hill this morning and shook hands with the soldiers and their families and offered his support. Governor Manchin says since the beginning, West Virginians have always been the most patriotic. Beckley authorities are working to solve a rash of vehicle break-ins in the past few days. Detective Captain Cedric Robertson says that about a dozen break-ins have occurred since January 21st, with three motels on Harper Road being especially hard hit. The thieves broke windows, pried open doors, stole purses, credit cards, and tools. Similar break-ins have also been reported in recent days in Princeton and Bluefield, Virginia. Robertson says anyone shopping, eating out, staying at a motel should put belongings and valuables in the trunk and call 911 if they see anything suspicious. A Marine from Alderson has been injured in a roadside blast in Iraq. Marine Lance Corporal Ronald Alden Howard was on routine patrol outside Baghdad Monday morning when the Humvee he was driving was struck by a roadside bomb. Howard was operated on for a broken arm and leg at a military hospital in Baghdad. He's being transferred to Ramstein Air Base in Germany. And a school for the county's most disruptive students could be in danger of shutting the doors. The Raleigh County Board of Education may close the alternative school at Sophia and set up an after-hours program in each of the county's high schools and in one middle school. The discussion came during a workshop board members conducted on Tuesday afternoon. For this evening, cloudy. Rain will move in, and then it'll change over to snow later tonight. About an inch accumulation, then rain showers tomorrow morning, turning into rain, and back into rain showers by Thursday afternoon. About an inch accumulation there. Tomorrow's high, mid to upper 30s. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
Why are men all over America talking about Testosterpro? Listen.
After I tried Testosterpro, I felt like I was the man I wanted to be. I wish I'd found out about it sooner because I feel like I'm more of a man now than when I was younger.
I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's health specialist. In many men, testosterone levels can fall rapidly after age 35. But now there's Testosterpro, the complete performance boosting system I designed for men who are starting to feel their age. If you don't feel like the man you used to be, call now for a 30-day risk-free trial of the Testosterpro system, which includes my bonus report on aging and its effects on energy, sex drive, and stamina, free with your order.
Call now for your confidential trial of Testosterpro. 1-800-596-8357. 1-800-596-8357. Results will vary. 1-800-596-8357. Guaranteed or your money back. 1-800-596-8357.
You've heard it all before. Lose weight while you sleep. Erase your debts instantly. Or make a fortune in your spare time. How about this one? Slash construction wages and four schools can be built for the price of three.
ridiculous?
Of course. Study after study proves that wage cuts won't reduce school construction costs. In fact, wage cuts hurt local companies and damage our communities. So don't believe everything you hear until you've heard the fact. A message from the Act Foundation.
In the depths of the Great Depression, not a single public library in America closed its doors. Banks went under, farmers went bankrupt, millions of people were out of work and out of luck, but the American public clung to its libraries, not only because of their inherent value to our society, but also because they are symbols of community strength and hope. How lame, then, to see public officials today, from George W. Bush to city council members, reaching for the budget axe to whack library funding, forcing branches to close, valuable services to be eliminated, and hours to be cut. In a time when governments dump billions of taxpayer dollars into corporate subsidies and boondoggles, our so-called leaders are failing the people by going after these true public treasures. Check out Salinas, California, a hard-hit working-class city which is now the largest population in America without a public library. Ironically, this is the hometown of John Steinbeck, the prize-winning author of The Grapes of Wrath and other powerful works that chronicle the human spirit during the Depression years. Steinbeck knew that literature has the power to elevate the spirit and help people rise above difficult times, and it's said that he got some of his early exposure to the power of literature at the Salinas Library. Since Steinbeck's day, Salinas expanded to 3 branch libraries, one named after him. But now, all 3 have been closed by the city council, which is facing large budget deficits. This move shuts out the 1,900 people a day who count on the library for books, literacy courses, internet access, after-school programs, and other services. Also, nearly 3 dozen employees have been shown the door. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is not a Salinas story, but a failure of all public leadership. Why are they dumping billions into Bush's Star Wars boondoggle, for example, while public libraries, which provide essential services that keep America informed and enlightened, are forced to go begging?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The library needs your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
WWNR Beckley,
West Virginia's only live nighttime talker, Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 22 minutes before 9 o'clock, 22 minutes before the pinhead-in-chief outlines his plans to rip off our future and make it impossible for us to retire. And the phone number, of course, 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. Jim Hightower's commentary about the Salinas, California? I haven't made any mention of this, but unless I'm mistaken, doesn't the Fayette County levy that goes down, the election on Saturday this coming, doesn't that have a little bit to do with our libraries in Fayette County? I may be wrong, but get out there and support the levy. It's if you're in Fayette County, do that. It's a good thing. A few more of Will Durst's rules for the George W. Bush 2005 State of the Union drinking game. If I wasn't going to be sitting here, I'd be tempted to play it. Number 8. Whenever George W. mentions the liberty or freedom of the Iraqi people, stand up, salute with your right hand, and drink a shot of beer with your left. If he's talking about the liberty or freedom of the American people, stand up, salute with your left hand, and drink a shot of beer with your right hand, and the first person to mess up has to drink 2 more shots. And the white guy in the suit is exempt from mistakes. The first time George Bush uses the phrases activist judges or trial lawyers, first person to stand up and yell, "I'm out of order, you're out of order," is exempt from having to drink 3 shots of beer. Everybody else does that. Number 10, if only half of the televised audience gives George W. a standing ovation, the red shirt and the white guy in the suit have to drink shots of beer for the duration of the applause. If either Ted Kennedy, Hillary Clinton, or John Kerry are shown not standing, the blue shirt and the senior citizen take over until Bush resumes speaking. Double time if senators are not applauding. Oh, this is good stuff. Whenever George W. mentions the phrase prescription drug plan, take a shot. The first time this happens, the last person to finish has to drink 2 more shots of beer and take out the trash during the Democratic response. White guy in the suit and the red shirt guy don't have to recycle. This is fun stuff. CommonDreams.org. Yeah, the wonderful stuff there all the way around. You should go there once in a while. Extras, number one, everybody gets to kick the crap out of the white guy in the suit for 15 seconds, only if Karl Rove's transmission link breaks and Bush begins to mumble excerpts from Hugo Weaving's soliloquy on how humans smell in the first Matrix. Oh, it's just wonderful, isn't it? Let's go to the phones and Maggie. Hey, Maggie, haven't heard from you in a while.
Yes, I haven't heard from you, but I wanted to congratulate you on your show.
Well, thank you.
It's a mighty fine show. I love it.
I appreciate it.
And you're coming in so plain lately.
Oh, well, wonderful. Must be something to do with the weather.
I don't know whether it was that or whether I got a new radio.
That can help, too.
That's right. Well, I wanted to tell you that I'm not going to be listening to Boy George's Live tonight.
Well, good. What do you have planned instead?
Oh, I'll find something. I'll pick up something besides him if I can find it. But he'll
test pattern.
Be on every station, you know.
Right. Well, you know, maybe Comedy Central probably. Now there'd be your good fun because Jon Stewart will probably be on Comedy Central, and he'll have a blast with it.
Well, you know, hear a thing about him because he'll tell you one thing one day, and the next day he didn't say it.
Right.
It wasn't said like that.
Oh, I know, and that's the way it works. It's like he's never, you know. George Bush has never said that Social Security is in crisis, even though he's said it 500,000 times. I know.
Well, you know what I mean. I wouldn't believe anything he told because if he keeps on in office long enough, it'll go.
There's one little hitch out there, Maggie, and that's Congress. Because even these good-for-nothing Republican congressmen have to deal with the fact that they have to stand for election in 2006, and there is going to be a lot of mighty angry people if they steal their Social Security from them.
Well, you know what I mean. I hope everybody goes after him. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because they worked for that money all them years, and you know what I mean? I don't think they'll lose it.
No.
You know who put it in to start with.
Right. Well, that's
the best president we ever had in office was FDR.
I think you're right. And this is just, you know, all of George Bush's talk is just spitting on the memory of FDR.
Well, I've got news for him. He'll never see the day he had the intelligence that man had.
Or the compassion or the human dignity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I hate that that groundhog seen his shadow because I thought pretty soon I'd get to play some lettuce.
That'll soon be time. You know, we had that warm snap in January, Maggie, and the daffodils were coming up in my yard.
I know. The tulips were coming up here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's nothing left of them now.
No. But, you know, one way or the other, I just assume March came in like a lion anyway. That means spring starts, you know, at the end of March.
Yeah, because I got news for you. If it comes in like a lion, it'll go out like a lamb or vice versa.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, it came in like a lamb last year, and we got hammered at the end of March.
Well, you know, we got 2 blizzards in March, remember?
Oh, absolutely. I remember them well.
93, and I can't remember that a year.
My wife and I had the flu during the blizzard of 93. Now, you want to talk about some fun?
Oh, Lord, I can imagine that. There was a baby born in this neighborhood, and they didn't get to bring it home for 4 or 5 days after her time was up to come home.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
I couldn't get in here with her.
No, I had something like that happen to us as well. 1994, my daughter was born, and it was in the middle of that big old ice storm.
Uh-huh.
And we had a 1 mile driveway to the house, and my wife and daughter had to stay in the hospital for a week extra because we couldn't get in, and there was no electricity.
My oldest son was born in 1944 on Thanksgiving morning, and you never saw such a snowstorm in your life. They canceled all buses and everything, couldn't come into town, and it was horrible, and I had to stay in the hospital for 10 days.
Oh, mercy.
It almost ran me crazy.
Well, I told the doctor, I said, do not let them out. I got nowhere to take them because, you know, the ice storm kept us from getting up our driveway, and when we got there was no electricity because all the power was down for 2 weeks.
Well, my doctor told me, he said, well, your husband's in service and you have nobody at home, so you just stay here and we'll take care of the baby for you. So what could I do?
Well, that was a decent kind of America, wasn't it, man?
Yes, it was. It was the good old days, Bob, and I'm afraid they'll never be like that again.
Well, you know, in this age, they'd kick you out on the street and say, well, you know, I'm sorry, the insurance company says they won't pay for more than a day and a half.
Well, like I say, the last one of my children was born in Charleston,
mm-hmm.
and they run me off the next day.
Yeah.
Told me that some man got burnt and needed my bed.
Goodness me.
And I said, well, if he needs it worse than I do, he can have it.
Absolutely. Well, Maggie, do take care and, find... you know, a test pattern, just about anything would be better than watching George.
Well, I'm not gonna watch George. And you know, Bob, it worries me because this is a me world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not you and not me. It's for me and me only.
Right. And most of the people, most of those me's, are making about six times as much money as you and I combined will ever make. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the way life goes. But you know, Bob, it'll all pay off in the end.
I hope so.
Well, I'm glad I got to talk to you, and congratulations on your show again.
Well, thank you again, Maggie. I appreciate it. Always good to hear from you.
Okay.
Take care. Bye now. You know, there is such a dichotomy between the world that the Greatest Generation made for us and the world that George Bush and his punk pals want to make for the next generation. The World War II generation made a world that was, in large part, a wonder. They transformed America forever and for the good. And these hateful people, these Bush people, want to destroy it. And you know, is there any accountability? You know, we hear that's one of those words that we hear from the Republicans: accountability and personal responsibility. And yet they have nothing to do with it. They're a shame and a blight on the efforts of my uncles who died in World War II, my father who fought in it, my father. You know, and I've mentioned it before. My father who watches George Bush and says, you know, everything my brothers fought and my brother fought and died for, everything I fought for, they make a mockery and a sham and a waste of it. That's a hard thing to hear from an 80-year-old man. Mighty hard. The sad thing is, it's also mighty true. Hey, Mel, you're head on.
How you doing, Bob?
Doing good.
Yeah, I'm trying to find something to do here. I was going to wad paper up and wad it, iron it, or do something here. Keep watching that.
Make little paper footballs.
Yeah. Dolls or whatever they do. But, you know, I was going to, I'm sure Wayne's probably listening. I was going to commend him. I heard him earlier today, you know, trying to reason on a earlier show there, and where there is no reasoning. And, you know, like Wayne said, why create such urgency and why create such crisis that we have to have this done immediately? You know, they claim this problem has existed for years. This crisis all of a sudden, you know, everyone agrees. The actuaries say that, you know, this thing's good probably to 2052. What's the rush? Why don't we sit down and talk about it? And, but, you know, I reckon we should be used to this. We got lied to, and Congress and all of us got lied to about the weapons of mass destruction.
Yep.
And crisis that existed that we go over there immediately and look, you know, look how what we got into there.
Exactly. Well, you know, and then before that, Mel, we got lied to about 9/11. You know, George Bush was no sooner in office in 2001 than the Hart-Rudman report was handed to him, and he said, "I don't have time for this. We got to get a tax cut." And it warned specifically of things like 9/11. And, you know, August 6th, Condoleezza Rice gets the presidential daily briefing that's called, you know, Bin Laden Determined to Strike in U.S. And she sits there under oath and lies to the Congress and said that was mostly a historical document.
Well, you know, someone said on the radio that if you tell a lie long enough, you start believing it yourself. You know, we're getting ready to hear a $100 million lie. Bush is going to start after tonight traveling all over the country, use $100 million to start telling people what a crisis Social Security's in. You know, I don't know if you heard about it. New York Times had an article in there. He's went to the blacks and told them that they were getting the bad.
Yeah, and that's just
playing the race card, you know.
Yeah, and that's just a dirty lie.
That's just about as dirty as low down as a snake crawling on their belly.
Yeah.
To go to the blacks and tell them because their death rate is so much higher and they die younger that they're getting a bad deal on Social Security.
But see, Paul Krugman took that all apart, Mel.
Well, that's what I read. I read, you know, that their life expectancy is 68.8 years, but that's due to a lot of young deaths.
Right.
It's due to, you know, if they want to do something for the blacks instead of use them, you know, they're killing. I bet the ratio in Iraq is blacks in this country versus blacks out of the 1,400 that's got killed over is very high.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised.
If they want to do something about it, they also said that was probably due to less health care that they get. You know, another thing.
Well,
too,
infant mortality too, Mel.
Yeah, well, another thing too, they make less money than us white folks. So, you know, they're taking such a beating, and I hope the Lord that they're smart enough to realize what these liars are doing, and they would go to no means. There's no. Nothing they wouldn't do to get their way.
Well, you know, Mel, I've having grown up in the South, I've had a lot of experience and some dear friends who are black and real smart, because, you know, you got to understand, for low 100 years and more now, black people have a real experience by in the business of getting ripped off by white hucksters. You know, George Bush did not invent the game. He's just the latest player of it. You know, whether it's a poll tax or a literacy test in order to vote, black Americans have been scammed and gamed and ripped off and abused by white America, well, you know, for pretty much as long as there's been white people and black people on this continent.
Well, you know, I have to say, and I've never been accused of not speaking my mind. You know, I ran for the House. We went to probably 30 some areas in these two counties and talked. And I am disappointed, and I hope a lot of blacks listen, because they had the poorest turnout of any areas that we visited, tried to talk to. They had the poorest turnout,
Now you're talking the primary or the general?
The primary.
Well, you know, you're right, but, you know, what was the overall turnout? 37%?
I don't know. Was it that high with blacks?
No.
I was going to say, with blacks.
Probably not. But, you know, again, this is white culture, Mel. And what, you know, what are we offering?
Well, I'm going to tell you what, those guys better start realizing they're the ones taking a beating, too. They're the ones' votes not counting. They're the ones dying, like I said, probably at a terrible ratio compared to the white people in Iraq.
Yeah.
They're the ones that's getting jerked around, you know, with this, like this right now. They're the ones that gets the worst health care. They're the ones that has less pay. My Lord, if those people don't, you know, wake up and get moving? Nobody, you know, nobody is. But, you know, something I was thinking about the other day, and they bitch and gripe about this Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something I thought about, you know, Social Security isn't just something to worry about when you get old, if you're going to get it. Do you realize that Social Security is an insurance program in case you get hurt tomorrow, you get disability, you know?
Oh, yeah, Title II and SSI.
Right.
And if, God forbid, something should happen to me, thank God there's Social Security
well,
there.
That's what I'll say. You know, we talk about it being a supplement to your income, your retirement income.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot more than that. They're playing with... You know, when you're paying that six whatever cents, you know, and your employer's matching it, he's paying for you more than the future. He's paying it maybe tomorrow. You know, if you're in an accident or something,
right?
And, you know, people need to realize that that Social Security is worth more than a retirement.
And
it's
see,
insurance in case you're disabled.
Well, not, yeah, and you know, there's something fundamentally mean and nasty about the way that Bush is approaching this, Mel. Because, among other things, consider all this, you know, I'm a uniter, not a divider, you know, the bug spray. This guy is out here trying to tell older Americans, well, you know, your benefits will be okay. It's the younger people that aren't going to have any benefits. So, you know, what's he saying to the old people?
Well,
he's saying
doing the same thing he's doing with the blacks and the whites. He's going to play the young and the old, the
yeah.
red and the blue. Anybody that can play against each other, it's the oldest, dirtiest trick in the book is, like I said, put people against each other, you know, and they are right now. They're against each other.
Well, you know, take the older Americans and say, look, you've got yours. Screw the young people.
Well, that's, like I said, that's kind of the way they're going. You know, another issue I'd like to bring up that I heard an individual say the other night that I thought was kind of something to think about, you know, to all the church goers and, well, I won't say these moral people that
yeah.
voted for all these moral issues and put Bush back in on moral issues. Remember, Social Security is a moral issue.
It absolutely is. Well, it is very basic Christianity with its boots on the ground, isn't it?
Well, you know, all of it I read it is. I think it tells you try to take care of the poor and the stuff, not take care of yourself and not see how much taxes you can not send in and see how many, you know, how many dollars you can collect. And like I said, I've said this before, they're more concerned in what they got or what they're going to get, worried about paying taxes. And like I said, and they're more worried about what the guy next door is getting for nothing. You know, if it's for them, it's great. It's a godsend. But if it's for the other guy, it's a handout. And like I said, they better stop and think if they're good moral Christians. This is a moral issue. When you start hurting people, you know, I hope that they read the Bible and they realize what they're doing and where they're coming from.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, that's part and parcel of this issue, this H.R. 235 we've been talking about, Mel. You know, this idea of allowing preachers to openly politic from the pulpit. You know, what, you know, if that thing should pass, you know, do you think for an instant that these fundamentalists aren't going to stand there and swear up and down that Social Security is the work of the devil? Because you see, that's what they do. If George Bush tells them something, they'll preach it.
Well, you know, a gentleman and I was having a discussion today, and like I said, Charleston Paper kind of put it the best way, the old Chinese proverb, you ride on the tiger's back, you end up in his belly.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's going to owe somebody something. And it may be, you know, the 16 Southern Baptist churches that held, had offices in their churches for Bush. I reckon now he's going to give them money, you know, supposedly to give to the poor. And, you know, it's going to give the preachers more authority and money. And but it's going to implode what it's going to do. You know, the Bible says there'll be a turning away. Well, you know, right now, I'll tell you the truth, I don't care, you know, how many people out there knows it. I really don't know a church that I can go to and comfortably sit there without seeing somebody have a WO4 sticker stuck on the door.
Yeah.
Run their mouth about who to vote for when it gets down to some of the best guys that I thought was going to keep their mouth shut, open it right at election time. And it's sad. It really is. It's a self-destruction, and they don't realize it. What got prayer out of school was people didn't have enough sense to figure out. Listen, you know, they say, well, you know, I want my what I think preached in school. No, I want what I believe preached in school.
You're right, Mel. Hey, Mel, we got to pull away. Okay. It's time to let the pinhead talk.
Okay. Well, I appreciate talking to you, Bob.
Take care, Mel.
You too. Bye.
See ya. All right, it's that time. This is News Talk 620 WWNR AM, Beckley, West Virginia. I'm Bob.
members of Congress, I have the high privilege and the distinct honor of presenting to you the President of the United States.
Mr. Speaker, Vice President Cheney, members of Congress, fellow citizens. As a new Congress gathers, all of us in the elected branches of government share a great privilege. We've been placed in office by the votes of the people we serve. And tonight, that is a privilege we share with newly elected leaders of Afghanistan, the Palestinian territories, Ukraine, and a free and sovereign Iraq. Ago, I stood on the steps of this Capitol and renewed the commitment of our nation to the guiding ideal of liberty for all. This evening, I will set forth policies to advance that ideal at home and around the world. Tonight, with a healthy, growing economy, with more Americans going back to work, with our nation an active force for good in the world, the state of our union is confident and strong. Our generation has been blessed by the expansion of opportunity, by advances in medicine, by the security purchased by our parents' sacrifice. Now, as we see a little gray in the mirror, or a lot of gray, and we watch our children moving into adulthood, we ask the question, what will be the state of their union? Members of Congress, the choices we make together will answer that question. Over the next several months, on issue after issue, let us do what Americans have always done and build a better world for our children and our grandchildren. First, we must be good stewards of this economy and renew the great institutions on which millions of our fellow citizens rely. America's economy is the fastest growing of any major industrialized nation. In the past 4 years, we provided tax relief to every person who pays income taxes, overcome a recession, opened up new markets abroad, prosecuted corporate criminals, raised home ownership to its highest level in history, and in the last year alone, the United States has added 2.3 million new jobs. When action was needed, the Congress delivered, and the nation is grateful. Now we must add to these achievements by making our economy more flexible, more innovative, and more competitive. We will keep America the economic leader of the world. America's prosperity requires restraining the spending appetite of the federal government. I welcome the bipartisan enthusiasm for spending discipline. I will send you a budget that holds the growth of discretionary spending below inflation, makes tax relief permanent, and stays on track to cut the deficit in half by 2009. My budget substantially reduces or eliminates more than 150 government programs that are not getting results, or duplicate current efforts, or do not fulfill essential priorities. The principle here is clear. Taxpayer dollars must be spent wisely or not at all. To make our economy stronger and more dynamic, we must prepare a rising generation to fill the jobs of the 21st century. Under the No Child Left Behind Act, standards are higher, test scores are on the rise, and we're closing the achievement gap for minority students. Now we must demand better results from our high schools, so every high school diploma is a ticket to success. We will help an additional 200,000 workers to get training for a better career by reforming our job training system and strengthening America's community colleges. And we will make it easier for Americans to afford a college education by increasing the size of Pell Grants. To make our economy stronger and more competitive, America must reward, not punish, the efforts and dreams of entrepreneurs. Small business is the path of advancement, especially for women and minorities. So we must free small businesses from needless regulation and protect honest job creators from junk lawsuits. Justice is distorted, and our economy is held back by irresponsible class actions and frivolous asbestos claims. And I urge Congress to pass legal reforms this year. To make our economy stronger and more productive, we must make health care more affordable and give families greater access to good coverage and more control over their health decisions. I ask Congress to move forward on a comprehensive health care agenda with tax credits to help low-income workers buy insurance, a community health center in every poor county, improved information technology to prevent medical error and needless costs, association health plans for small businesses and their employees, expanded health savings accounts, and medical liability reform that will reduce health care costs and make sure patients have the doctors and care they need. To keep our economy growing, we also need reliable supplies of affordable, environmentally responsible energy. Nearly 4 years ago, I submitted a comprehensive energy strategy that encourages conservation, alternative sources, a modernized electricity grid, and more production here at home, including safe, clean nuclear energy. My Clear Skies legislation will cut power plant pollution and improve the health of our citizens. And my budget provides strong funding for leading-edge technology, from hydrogen-fueled cars to clean coal to renewable sources such as ethanol. Years of debate is enough. I urge Congress to pass legislation that makes America more secure and less dependent on foreign energy. these proposals are essential to expand this economy and add new jobs. But they're just the beginning of our duty. To build the prosperity of future generations, we must update institutions that were created to meet the needs of an earlier time. Year after year, Americans are burdened by an archaic, incoherent federal tax code. I've appointed a bipartisan panel to examine the tax code from top to bottom. And when the recommendations are delivered, you and I will work together to give this nation a tax code that is pro-growth, easy to understand, and fair to all. America's immigration system is also outdated, unsuited to the needs of our economy and to the values of our country. We should not be content with laws that punish hardworking people who want only to provide for their families, and deny businesses willing workers, and invite chaos at our border. It is time for an immigration policy that permits temporary guest workers to fill jobs Americans will not take, that rejects amnesty, that tells us who is entering and leaving our country, and that closes the border to drug dealers and terrorists. One of America's most important institutions, a symbol of the trust between generations, is also in need of wise and effective reform. Social Security was a great moral success of the 20th century, and we must honor its great purposes in this new century. The system, however, on its current path is headed toward bankruptcy, and so we must join together to strengthen and save Social Security. Today, more than 45 million Americans receive Social Security benefits, and millions more are nearing retirement. And for them, the system is sound and fiscally strong. I have a message for every American who is 55 or older. Do not let anyone mislead you. For you, the Social Security system will not change in any way. For younger workers, the Social Security system has serious problems that will grow worse with time. Social Security was created decades ago for a very different era. In those days, people did not live as long. Benefits were much lower than they are today. And a half century ago, about 16 workers paid into the system for each person drawing benefits. Our society has changed in ways the founders of Social Security could not have foreseen. In today's world, people are living longer and therefore drawing benefits longer. And those benefits are scheduled to rise dramatically over the next few decades. And instead of 16 workers paying in for every beneficiary, right now it's only about 3 workers. And over the next few decades, that number will fall to just 2 workers per beneficiary. With each passing year, fewer workers are paying ever higher benefits to an ever larger number of retirees. So here's the result. 13 years from now, in 2018, Social Security will be paying out more than it takes in. And every year afterward will bring a new shortfall, bigger than the year before. For example, in the year 2027, the government will somehow have to come up with an extra $200 billion to keep the system afloat. And by 2033, the annual shortfall would be more than $300 billion. By the year 2042, the entire system would be exhausted and bankrupt. If steps are not taken to avert that outcome, the only solutions would be dramatically higher taxes, massive new borrowing, or sudden and severe cuts in Social Security benefits or other government programs. I recognize that 2018 and 2042 may seem a long way off, but those days aren't so distant, as any parent will tell you. If you have a five-year-old, you're already concerned about how you'll pay for college tuition 13 years down the road. If you've got children in their 20s, as some of us do, the idea of Social Security collapsing before they retire does not seem like a small matter. And it should not be a small matter to the United States Congress. You and I share a responsibility. We must pass reforms that solve the financial problems of Social Security once and for all. Fixing Social Security permanently will require an open, candid review of the options. Some have suggested limiting benefits for wealthy retirees. Former Congressman Tim Penny has raised the possibility of indexing benefits to prices rather than wages. During the 1990s, my predecessor, President Clinton, spoke of increasing the retirement age. Former Senator John Brough suggested discouraging early collection of Social Security benefits. The late Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan recommended changing the way benefits are calculated. All these ideas are on the table. I know that none of these reforms would be easy, but we have to move ahead with courage and honesty, because our children's retirement security is more important than partisan politics. I'll work with members of Congress to find the most effective combination of reforms. I will listen to anyone who has a good idea to offer. We must, however, be guided by some basic principles. We must make Social Security permanently sound, not leave that task for another day. We must not jeopardize our economic strength by increasing payroll taxes. We must ensure that lower-income Americans get the help they need to have dignity and peace of mind in their retirement. We must guarantee there is no change for those now retired or nearing retirement. And we must take care that any changes in the system are gradual, so younger workers have years to prepare and plan for their future. As we fix Social Security, we also have the responsibility to make the system a better deal for younger workers. And the best way to reach that goal is through voluntary personal retirement accounts. Here's how the idea works. Right now, a set portion of the money you earn is taken out of your paycheck to pay for the Social Security benefits of today's retirees. If you're a younger worker, I believe you should be able to set aside part of that money in your own retirement account so you can build a nest egg for your own future. Here's why the personal accounts are a better deal. Your money will grow over time at a greater rate than anything the current system can deliver. And your account will provide money for retirement over and above the check you will receive from Social Security. In addition, you will be able to pass along the money that accumulates in your personal account, if you wish, to your children and grandchildren. And best of all, the money in the account is yours, and the government can never take it away. The goal here is greater security in retirement, so we will set careful guidelines for personal accounts. We'll make sure the money can only go into a conservative mix of bonds and stock funds. We'll make sure that your earnings are not eaten up by hidden Wall Street fees. We'll make sure there are good options to protect your investments from sudden market swings on the eve of your retirement. We'll make sure a personal account cannot be emptied out all at once, but rather paid out over time as an addition to traditional Social Security benefits. And we will make sure this plan is fiscally responsible. By starting personal accounts gradually and raising the yearly limits on contributions over time, eventually permitting all workers to set aside 4 percentage points of their payroll taxes in their accounts. Personal retirement accounts should be familiar to federal employees, because you already have something similar called the Thrift Savings Plan, which lets workers deposit a portion of their paychecks into any of 5 different broadly based investment funds. It's time to extend the same security and choice and ownership to young Americans. Our second great responsibility to our children and grandchildren is to honor and to pass along the values that sustain a free society. So many of my generation, after a long journey, have come home to family and faith, and are determined to bring up responsible, moral children. Government is not the source of these values, but government should never undermine them. Because marriage is a sacred institution and the foundation of society, it should not be redefined by activist judges. For the good of families, children, and society, I support a constitutional amendment to protect the institution of marriage. Because a society is measured by how it treats the weak and vulnerable, we must strive to build a culture of life. Medical research can help us reach that goal by developing treatments and cures that save lives and help people overcome disabilities. And I thank the Congress for doubling the funding of the National Institutes of Health. To build a culture of life, we must also ensure that scientific advances always serve human dignity, not take advantage of some lives for the benefit of others. We should all be able to agree on some clear standards. I will work with Congress to ensure that human embryos are not created for experimentation or grown for body parts, and that human life is never bought or sold as a commodity. America will continue to lead the world in medical research that is ambitious, aggressive, and always ethical. Because courts must always deliver impartial justice, judges have a duty to faithfully interpret the law, not legislate from the bench. As president, I have a constitutional responsibility to nominate men and women who understand the role of courts in our democracy and are well qualified to serve on the bench, and I have done so. The Constitution also gives the Senate a responsibility. Every judicial nominee deserves an up or down vote. Because one of the deepest values of our country is compassion. We must never turn away from any citizen who feels isolated from the opportunities of America. Our government will continue to support faith-based and community groups that bring hope to harsh places. Now we need to focus on giving young people, especially young men in our cities, better options than apathy or gangs or jail. Tonight I propose a 3-year initiative to help organizations keep young people out of gangs and show young men an ideal of manhood that respects women and rejects violence. Taking on gang life will be one part of a broader outreach to at-risk youth, which involves parents and pastors, coaches and community leaders, and programs ranging from literacy to sports. And I'm proud that the leader of this nationwide effort will be our First Lady, Laura Bush. Because HIV/AIDS brings suffering and fear into so many lives, I ask you to reauthorize the Ryan White Act to encourage prevention and provide care and treatment to the victims of that disease. And as we update this important law, we must focus our efforts on fellow citizens with the highest rates of new cases, African American men and women. Because one of the main sources of our national unity is our belief in equal justice, we need to make sure Americans of all races and backgrounds have confidence in the system that provides justice. In America, we must make doubly sure no person is held to account for a crime he or she did not commit. So we are dramatically expanding the use of DNA evidence to prevent wrongful conviction. Soon I will send to Congress a proposal to fund special training for defense counsel in capital cases, because people on trial for their lives must have competent lawyers by their side. Our third responsibility to future generations is to leave them an America that is safe from danger and protected by peace. We will pass along to our children all the freedoms we enjoy, and chief among them is freedom from fear. In the 3.5 years since September the 11th, 2001, we've taken unprecedented actions to protect Americans. We've created a new department of government to defend our homeland, focus the FBI on preventing terrorism, begun to reform our intelligence agencies, broken up terror cells across the country, expanded research on defenses against biological and chemical attack, improved border security, and trained more than 500,000 first responders. Police and firefighters, air marshals, researchers, and so many others are working every day to make our homeland safer, and we thank them all. Our nation, working with allies and friends, has also confronted the enemy abroad with measures that are determined, successful, and continuing. The Al-Qaeda terror network that attacked our country still has leaders, but many of its top commanders have been removed. There are still governments that sponsor and harbor terrorists, but their number has declined. There are still regimes seeking weapons of mass destruction, but no longer without attention and without consequence. Our country is still the target of terrorists who want to kill many and intimidate us all. And we will stay on the offensive against them until the fight is won. Pursuing our enemies is a vital commitment of the war on terror, and I thank the Congress for providing our service men and women with the resources they have needed. During this time of war, we must continue to support our military and give them the tools for victory. Other nations around the globe have stood with us. In Afghanistan, an international force is helping provide security. In Iraq, 28 countries have troops on the ground. The United Nations and the European Union provided technical assistance for the elections. And NATO is leading a mission to help train Iraqi officers. We're cooperating with 60 governments in the Proliferation Security Initiative to detect and stop the transit of dangerous materials. We're working closely with the governments in Asia to convince North Korea to abandon its nuclear ambitions. Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and 9 other countries have captured or detained Al-Qaeda terrorists. In the next 4 years, my administration will continue to build the coalitions that will defeat the dangers of our time. In the long term, the peace we seek will only be achieved by eliminating the conditions that feed radicalism and ideologies of murder. If whole regions of the world remain in despair and grow in hatred, they will be the recruiting grounds for terror. And that terror will stalk America and other free nations for decades. The only force powerful enough to stop the rise of tyranny and terror and replace hatred with hope is the force of human freedom. Our enemies know this, and that is why the terrorist Zarqawi recently declared war on what he called the evil principle of democracy. And we've declared our own intention. America will stand with the allies of freedom to support democratic movements in the Middle East and beyond, with the ultimate goal of ending tyranny in our world. The United States has no right, no desire, and no intention to impose our own. That is one of the main differences between us and our enemies. They seek to impose and expand an empire of oppression, in which a tiny group of brutal, self-appointed rulers control every aspect of every life. Our aim is to build and preserve a community of free and independent nations, with governments that answer to their citizens and reflect their own cultures. And because democracies respect their own people and their neighbors, the advance of freedom will lead to peace. That advance has great momentum in our time, shown by women voting in Afghanistan and Palestinians choosing a new direction and the people of Ukraine asserting their democratic rights and electing a president. We are witnessing landmark events in the history of liberty, and in the coming years, we will add to that story. The beginnings of reform and democracy in the Palestinian territories are now showing the power of freedom to break old patterns of violence and failure. Tomorrow morning, Secretary of State Rice departs on a trip that will take her to Israel and the West Bank for meetings with Prime Minister Sharon and President Abbas. She will discuss with them how we and our friends can help the Palestinian people end terror and build the institutions of a peaceful, independent, democratic state. To promote this democracy, I will ask Congress for $350 million to support Palestinian political, economic, and security reforms. The goal of two democratic states, Israel and Palestine living side by side in peace, is within reach, and America will help them achieve that goal. Promote peace and stability in the broader Middle East, the United States will work with our friends in the region to fight the common threat of terror while we encourage a higher standard of freedom. Hopeful reform is already taking hold in an arc from Morocco to Jordan to Bahrain. The government of Saudi Arabia can demonstrate its leadership in the region by expanding the role of its people in determining their future. And the great and proud nation of Egypt, which showed the way toward peace in the Middle East, can now show the way toward democracy in the Middle East. To promote peace in the broader Middle East, we must confront regimes that continue to harbor terrorists and pursue weapons of mass murder. Syria still allows its territory and parts of Lebanon to be used by terrorists who seek to destroy every chance of peace in the region. You have passed, and we are applying the Syrian Accountability Act, and we expect the Syrian government to end all support for terror and open the door to freedom. Today, Iran remains the world's primary state sponsor of terror, pursuing nuclear weapons while depriving its people of the freedom they seek and deserve. We are working with European allies to make clear to the Iranian regime that it must give up its uranium enrichment program and any plutonium reprocessing and end its support for terror. And to the Iranian people, I say tonight, as you stand for your own liberty, America stands with you. Our generational commitment to the advance of freedom, especially in the Middle East, is now being tested and honored in Iraq. That country is a vital front in the war on terror, which is why the terrorists have chosen to make a stand there. Our men and women in uniform are fighting terrorists in Iraq, so we do not have to face them here at home. victory of freedom in Iraq will strengthen a new ally in the war on terror, inspire democratic reformers from Damascus to Tehran, bring more hope and progress to a troubled region, and thereby lift a terrible threat from the lives of our children and grandchildren. We will succeed because the Iraqi people value their own liberty as they showed the world last Sunday. Across Iraq, often at great risk, millions of citizens went to the polls and elected 275 men and women to represent them in a new transitional National Assembly. A young woman in Baghdad told of waking to the sound of mortar fire on election day and wondering if it might be too dangerous to vote. She said, hearing those explosions, it occurred to me, the insurgents are weak. They are afraid of democracy. They are losing. So I got my husband, and I got my parents, and we all came out and voted together. Americans recognize that spirit of liberty because we share it. In any nation, casting your vote is an act of civic responsibility. For millions of Iraqis, it was also an act of personal courage, and they have earned the respect of us all. One of Iraq's leading democracy and human rights advocates is Sabiha Taleb al-Suhail. She says of her country, "We were occupied for 35 years by Saddam Hussein. That was the real occupation. Thank you to the American people who paid the cost, but most of all, to the soldiers." 11 years ago, Sophia's father was assassinated by Saddam's intelligence service. 3 days ago in Baghdad, Sophia was finally able to vote for the leaders of her country, and we are honored that she is with us tonight. Terrorists and insurgents are violently opposed to democracy and will continue to attack it. Yet the terrorist's most powerful myth is being destroyed. The whole world is seeing that the car bombers and assassins are not only fighting coalition forces, they are trying to destroy the hopes of Iraqis expressed in free elections. And the whole world now knows that a small group of extremists will not overturn the will of the Iraqi people. We will succeed in Iraq because Iraqis are determined to fight for their own freedom and to write their own history. As Prime Minister Alawi said in his speech to Congress last September, Ordinary Iraqis are anxious to shoulder all the security burdens of our country as quickly as possible. That is the natural desire of an independent nation, and it is also the stated mission of our coalition in Iraq. The new political situation in Iraq opens a new phase of our work in that country. At the recommendation of our commanders on the ground, and in consultation with the Iraqi government, we will increasingly focus our efforts on helping prepare more capable Iraqi security forces, forces with skilled officers, and an effective command structure. As those forces become more self-reliant and take on greater security responsibilities, America and its coalition partners will increasingly be in a supporting role. In the end, Iraqis must be able to defend their own country, and we will help that proud new nation secure its liberty. Recently, an Iraqi interpreter said to a reporter, "Tell America not to abandon us." He and all Iraqis can be certain, while our military strategy is adapting to circumstances, our commitment remains firm and unchanging. We are standing for the freedom of our Iraqi friends, and freedom in Iraq will make America safer for generations to come. We will not set an artificial timetable for leaving Iraq, because that would embolden the terrorists and make them believe they can wait us out. We are in Iraq to achieve a result, a country that is democratic, representative of all its people, at peace with its neighbors, and able to defend itself. And when that result is achieved, our men and women serving in Iraq will return home with the honor they have earned. Right now, Americans in uniform are serving at posts across the world, often taking great risks on my orders. We have given them training and equipment, and they have given us an example of idealism and character that makes every American proud. The volunteers of our military are unrelenting in battle, unwavering in loyalty, unmatched in honor and decency, and every day they're making our nation more secure. Some of our servicemen and women have survived terrible injuries, and this grateful nation will do everything we can to help them recover. And we have said farewell to some very good men and women who died for our freedom and whose memory this nation will honor forever. One name we honor is Marine Corps Sergeant Byron Norwood of Pflugerville, Texas, who was killed during the assault on Fallujah. His mom, Janet, sent me a letter and told me how much Byron loved being a Marine and how proud he was to be on the front line against terror. She wrote, when Byron